Well, yes, let's hope a change going to come in 2022. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. Coming up next, Good Morning Nueva York with me, your host, King Downing. Good morning.
You know how I feel. Breeze drifting by. You know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. Feeling good.
How are you this morning? It's time for Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till 7 a.m. Michael G. Haskins, Catherine Davis is engineering in studio. And we're going to talk about our program in a minute, but what we're going to do now is we're going to turn to some music while we take care of some technical things. But I'll go through my opening anyway. If you're waking up, rise and shine with us. If you're already up, stay with us. And if you're one of the many overnight or essential workers just turning in, let us tuck you in. It's a new month, a new year, a new decade, and my motto for this year is going to be breakthrough in 22. So this is your chance to get it started. We opened up with Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves, and then, of course, our theme song, Feeling Good, by Andy Bay and the Bay Sisters. We're going to go to some music, and then we'll be right back. No, you know what? Let's do weather and transit right now. It's 38 degrees. It's fair. 1% chance of rain. High of 39, low of 30. Sunrise, 7:19 a.m. Sunset, 4:44 p.m. For the day, we're looking at 37 degrees, mostly cloudy, no chance of rain. For the afternoon, 38 degrees, mostly cloudy, no chance of rain. For the evening, 34 degrees, cloudy, 14% chance of rain. For tomorrow, Friday, a high of 35, low of 21. Morning snow. We've been waiting for snow. 10 to 20 mile an hour winds, 70% chance of rain. For the subways, delays on the 1, no service on the B. Planned service changes on the 3, 6, 7, AC, BDFM, JZ, QWS, and SIR. Go to mta.info for the latest. And now, on with the program.
Life in Pennsylvania means just that. Life without the possibility of parole. For us lifers, as we call ourselves, our only chance for release is through commutation, which has only been granted to 2 women since 1989, close to 30 years ago. Our song, This Is Not Our Home, it tells of our experiences while doing life without the possibility of parole.
I'm a woman. I'm a grandmother, I'm a daughter, I have a son, I'm not an angel, I'm not the devil, I came to jail when I was so young. Yeah. 08106, incarcerated 29 years. My name is Brenda Watkins. I was born and raised in Hoffman, North Carolina. This is not my home.
Inmate number OB2472. I've been incarcerated for 27 years. My name is Thelma Nichol. I was born and raised in Philadelphia, PA. This is not my home.
OO8494. I've been incarcerated for 27 years. My name is Danielle Hadley. I was born and raised in Philadelphia, PA. And this is not my home.
Inmate 008309. I've been incarcerated for 27 years. My name is Teresa Battles. I'm from Newark, New Jersey, and this is not my home.
I am known as inmate 007080. I've been incarcerated for 30 years. My name is Deborah Brown. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is not my home.
OO5961. I've been incarcerated for 37 years. My name is Joanne Butler. And I was born and raised in Philadelphia. This is not my home.
Number 005634. I've been incarcerated for 39 and one half years. My name is Diane Hamill Metzger. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and this is not my home.
I am 004867, incarcerated 40 years. My name is Lena Brown, and I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and this is not my home.
My number is 005545. My name is Trina Garnett. I've been incarcerated for 37 years, since I was 14 years old. Born and raised in Chester, Pennsylvania, and this is not my home. Die alone, or die alone.
Well, how about that? That was This Is Not My Home by the Lady Lifers. They're from Muncie State Prison in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable story, unbelievable song. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. We're also streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. The program is Good Morning, Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here until 7 a.m. Catherine Davis is engineering in studio. And on our program today, I just had to look that way to the end because the part where they tell the number of years and the last one been there since she was 14. So on today's program, we continue our coverage of mass incarceration, this time looking at the much ignored and overlooked issue of women in the system. This morning's organization was one of the first to focus on access to higher education for women in the justice system, and they're doing it on three fronts, all the while pushing to bring equity and to restore cuts in prison education programs. The organization is College and Community Fellowship. One of their programs is overturning the ban on college tuition grants going to incarcerated people, especially women. So joining us this morning is Stephanie Bazell, the organization College and Community Fellowship, and she is their Director of Advocacy. Good morning, Stephanie.
Morning. How are you?
I'm great, and thank you for joining us. And also joining us is Anissa Sabour, who is an alum of College and Community Fellowship, and she's also an advocate. Good morning, Anissa.
Good morning, and Happy New Year. Thank you for having me.
Yes, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to our listeners. Let's tell us something about the mission of College and Community Fellowship.
Absolutely. So it started out initially with Marymount just working at Bedford Hills, and Barbara Martinson, who's our founder, saw that there was a great deal of people who were not getting access to education inside and were also, upon release, facing extraordinary collateral consequences and a lot of barriers to education. And so she founded the organization on that basis. And over the past 25 years, we have grown, but the theory of change behind it has always been that education is key, it's transformational, denying education is a means of oppression, and that if you give someone the gift of education, you are providing them with self-efficacy, so that we're not measuring people who are incarcerated by recidivism or whether they're going to commit another crime, but by long-term success and by thriving. And people like Anissa are testaments to the extraordinary power of education.
And Anissa, let's turn to you. So what did the program do for you, and what are you doing now?
So let me say that I was able to, as Stephanie said, as a collateral consequence, in the beginning, have a barrier to higher education once I was released. But actually becoming a part of CCF's advocacy, was able to advocate for myself along with the program and get into college and achieve my associates, and then begin to work in the field of advocacy that I chose, really trying to help women change some of the policies and barriers and stigmas around women and incarceration. And so I know for me, if I would not have gotten my associate's degree, I would have went back again, because I had been incarcerated twice. The first time I was incarcerated, I was able to achieve 9 credits while I was inside. And once I got out and could not get that education because I did not know about CCF and all of the supports that they offered, I went back. And when I went back, there was no longer the education program within the facilities. So I was stagnated, right? I was in there just absolutely doing nothing. I had no idea which way I was going to go when I got out. And the second time around, I was able to get out and realize that there were resources available through CCF to actually get my associates. It really helped to turn my life around. And I have been home and working it for 17 years since then.
Good for you. What did you get your degree in, and what kind of advocacy are you doing now?
So I got my degree in human services, and I've done from reentry advocacy to ending solitary confinement in all state facilities. I've worked on issues around women and their parental rights. I've advocated for women to not be shackled while they're pregnant. And most recently in 2019, we got the Domestic Violence Survivor Justice Bill passed, which would help women who are survivors of violence reapply to the courts to get their sentences changed. And thus far, we are working on 17 women actually being resentenced and getting their freedom through this act. And so, yeah, so I continue to work around advocacy that I know would bring healing and justice to women in New York State facilities.
Great. So, Stephanie, we're gonna take a listen to a clip, and maybe you could just tell us in a quick sentence about Dorian Bess.
Yes, she is involved in CCF in a number of ways. Most recently, she's a part of our mentorship program with another amazing advocate named Mimi Pasquale. She has a very interesting story in terms of her journey with incarceration that is not unlike a lot of women, where there's, you know, it's often very much issues of survival. And so we interviewed her as part of trying to uplift what we can discuss in a little bit, but the historical nexus between denying education inside, and to build off what Anissa just said, Anissa had the unique experience of being incarcerated with financial aid and then later being offered, and then later when the ban was put in place. Dorian has a similar situation where she was incarcerated twice, once while there was educational opportunity and later while there wasn't.
Let's take a listen to it. Okay, so this is Dorian Bess from CCF.
You know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child? Well, it takes education as well to raise our generations so that they understand what the true values in life are. Education opens up a whole different mindset, a whole new world, a whole new vocabulary. You start to think and believe that you can do more with your life. So on my first bid, we did have access to education. And all of a sudden, after 10 months into the program, it was pulled. Little did we know, they were pulling the Pell and Tap. That hopelessness that I had, saying, you know what, education is not going to happen for me. I don't have the money to do it. That hunger, coming home and walking into a job with a bachelor's, even the time that I served, a master's degree, would put me at a higher pay grade right now. I wouldn't have to work two jobs, you know. African-American women are at the bottom of the employment totem pole, so to speak. Now we're seeing a huge success rate of women completing college, getting doctorate degrees, young women who say, you know, I'm not going to be that status quo anymore. I'm not going to be that statistic anymore. I'm going to do whatever it takes for me to be successful. And usually it's through education, and they have a hunger for it. And a lot of women inside have that hunger. But when it's not available to you, it's like you feed that hunger with something else. And whatever that something else might be, right? You feed it with something else, or you just say, you know what? It's not designed for us, and you give up on yourself. And that's something that being incarcerated and uneducated really promotes, not an autonomy to move forward, but it takes you back some years, because when you come out, you're really behind the ball, because now you've sat all that time with your mind doing absolutely nothing, and you come home and you feel hopeless. There's no hope in moving forward. And it takes a minute to get out of that black hole of hopelessness, not having education available. It's important that we keep ourselves educated so that we can keep the next generation growing and growing and growing. Because it's just not about incarceration. It's about building, rebuilding communities over and over and over and over and over again. That's how you move forward. That's how you build communities. You teach.
So that was Dorian Bess. In our minute before we go to the second half, and our guests are still going to be here, Stephanie, can you tell us, just open up the topic, and then we'll go into it more in the second half, of this whole process of how these grants suddenly became unavailable?
Absolutely. So it goes back to the Violent Crime Bill of 1994, and there had been leading up to that a lot about how basically, and it was an overtly racist policy, but basically that we should lock people up and throw away the key, which re-entered the national zeitgeist when Biden became president because he was a part of that conversation. So they took away a lot of rehabilitative programs, instituted things like mandatory minimums, and at the federal level, they Pell had successfully operated inside prisons for several decades, and they stripped away the funding, and by doing that, stripped away most of the educational programming. And then Governor Pataki in 1995 immediately followed suit and just banned TAP. So that's how both programs were ended.
That's a great summary. We're going to pick up on this in the second half of the program, but I just wanted to tease people into the second half. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. The program is Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till 7 a.m. Captain Davis is engineering in studio, and we'll be continuing our conversation with Stephanie Bazell, Director of Advocacy for College and Community Fellowship, or CCF, and Anissa Sabour, who is also an alum of College and Community Fellowship and has become an advocate in her own right after her own experiences. So we'll be right back after some messages. Don't go anywhere. There's a lot more conversation to go, and we'll be taking your calls.
This is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
WBAI is local station board, the Pacifica Foundation board, responsible for advising local management and operations, is holding its next meeting on Wednesday, January 12th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be the occasion of a delegate assembly to elect WBAI representatives to the Pacifica National Board. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, January 12th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. That's 922.457.2995. And as if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995.995.99. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we sure hope that you do.
Life in Pennsylvania means just that. Life without the possibility of parole. For us lifers, as we call ourselves, our only chance for release is through commutation, which has only been granted to two women since 1989, close to 30 years ago. Our song, This Is Not Our Home, it tells of our experiences while doing life without the possibility of parole.
WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. If you're just joining us, the program is Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till 7 a.m. Catherine Davis is engineering, and we're continuing our conversation around women, incarceration, and education. This all is part of our continuing coverage of mass incarceration. This time we're looking at the much ignored and overlooked issue of the women in the system. This morning's organization was one of the first to focus on access to higher education for women in the justice system, and they're doing it on three fronts, all while pushing to bring equity and to restore cuts in prison education programs. The organization is College and Community Fellowship. One of their programs is overturning the ban on college tuition grants, as you heard if you were with us earlier. And they're trying to get these grants restored to incarcerated people, but especially women. And so joining us is Stephanie Bazell, Director of Advocacy for College and Community Fellowship, or CCF, and Anissa Sabour, who was an alum of College and Community Fellowship under the program. She got her college degree and now has become an advocate. So turning to you, Stephanie, you were just talking to us about that notorious crime bill and how it took away the federal grants, and then the states, including New York State, followed up. So now you're working to restore that, and you all have put out a report. And I'd like you to just tell us a little about that. And for folks who want to follow the organization, you can go to collegeandcommunity.org and you can look for a report called Turn on the Tap, TAP referring to the state's college tuition grant program. So tell us about the findings of the report.
Yes,
so
this is a report that was done years ago. And it was looking at the health indicators that are associated with increased access to education, which is very common that we see in communities, because a lot of the communities that are ravaged by cyclical incarceration, because we believe in root crime theory, we think comes from the divestment of resources. Once you reintroduce education, it tends to improve a number of different indicators. So that was amongst the major findings, but a lot of it also had to do with what's been proven empirically in a number of different studies that have looked at college and prison, which is that there are just enormous benefits ranging from increased employment, enormous cost savings for the state to transforming communities and really uplifting them, and women play a critical role in that because of how much women take care of the community. So that was one such report, but there are very many out there that all speak to the power of education. But I will say, until this year, when we were dealing with this issue, it was really falling on deaf ears, even though we had so much empirical evidence and there was no downside, given that this has such a low fiscal and saves the state so much. We still were getting so much opposition, and the bill that we are working on to turn on the tap was actually first introduced in 1999, and it has never been voted out of the Higher Education Committee in either the Senate or the Assembly.
So what's with these folks? I mean, you talk about the savings, so I want to refer what I call our play-at-home audience. So you can go to turnonthetapny.org, turnonthetapny.org, and you can see this report. And one of the points it says there is TAP for people in prison would save New York State between $22 million and $27.5 million a year. And it accounts for less than 1% of the overall TAP budget. In other words, the money for incarcerated people, and would not take away funding for other students. What is this mindset that politicians ignore what I call the externalities, the costs that aren't easily measured, but, you know, a woman who gets out and she has children, she's got a degree, all of a sudden she's providing for them, and they're not undergoing delinquencies. She has better health outcomes, and the kids aren't making visible, visits to the hospital. What is the mindset of the politicians to just ignore this?
Yeah, it's built upon the same rhetoric that was what got this banned on the federal level as well. And it's they created a false dichotomy, which was that you had to basically choose between traditional students or incarcerated students. And there was this sense that no taxpayer money should go towards educating incarcerated people because they should be completely in a punitive state. And if we were to ever move anything on education related to incarcerated people, that would encourage people to go to prison. And on the Senate floor as recently as 2016, they said things like, hell no to Attica University. The then governor's Republican opponent said that he was going to teach his son to rob a bank so that he could go to college for free. There was also a Kids Before Cons campaign that was led by New York federal legislators in opposition to any educational programming whatsoever. And this is a really regressive mindset, which is not consistent across all of the states, even red states. New York has particularly insidious racism, and also this rhetoric has had a long-standing stronghold. And there's actually a piece, if you read that I wrote on this very issue, called The Words We Use and the Policies We Get, from New York Daily News, that was about how this language was really able to capture them. But it's really terrible. And when we work with you know, amazing advocates like Anissa, we do have to provide trainings on, and Anissa is actually an incredibly accomplished advocate far before CCF, but we have to
Let's turn to Anissa now, yeah. Because Anissa, you told the story of how if it hadn't been for your college degree, you feel that you would have gone back inside. And in your advocacy, along with your story, there may be people out here say, well, that's one story. Could you talk about other people? You don't have to name names, but sort of talk about the number of people and the kinds of things that their education allowed them to avoid, and and some stories about people who, once this was taken away, what they ended up getting into.
So I'm going to say just for myself, really quickly, that, you know, once I got out...
Well, no, Anissa, I'm sorry. You see, you told your story, but the thing is, there may be people who say, okay, she's one in a million, so she got lucky. And I'm not asking you to name names.
I'm just
going to
say that.
Say,
no, I understand that, but let me just say this. When I got out and could not get education, right, I went back. And there were many people that I met on the way that was recycling in and out of the system. And you know, Stephanie just said it, you know, it was the language and the punitive dichotomy that they kept pushing in the politics to say that we were not worthy, especially we were not worthy.
I'm trying to, because I'm sorry that I'm on a timetable, and you told your story. Stephanie told us what the mindset of the politicians was, and I'm just looking for a couple of examples without naming names. Like, here's a person who got their education and they went on to do this, and here's someone who didn't, and here's what happened to them without naming names.
I'm not going to name women, but I'm going to say the Coalition for Women's Prisoners, right, that I coordinated for many years, I saw at least 10 women come out, get their master's, right, on the outside, because there was no education inside at this time, come out with the help of other organizations, get, and some of them through CCF, get master's degrees and are now running their own organizations, their executive directors, their policy directors. These are women who was on the inside. They opened up reentry houses, and they're founding organizations that can help women, especially on the reentry end. So at least 10 women right now, I can go through a list of names, but I'm not going to name names.
There you go.
It wouldn't be
there
possible,
you go.
But I get you.
That's,
and so, yeah, so,
that's
so
what I'm looking for.
The education piece is really, really important. If some of them could have gotten their degrees on the inside, they would have came out and started doing this work. I had people,
okay,
I know people.
Hold that thought. I'm sorry. We're on a tight schedule, and I'm going to get now to the action items. But first, I want to talk to folks about a special campaign. Classic slow jams. Do you remember that? I've been talking to you about slow jams every day for a special reason, and I'll get to that in a second. But it had me thinking back to how when I first started going to parties and a slow song would come on. But my friend Heather, now I'm well over 6 feet tall, and she was about 5 feet tall. And she had a knack for comedy. And so when she and I would slow dance, she would say in this loud voice so everybody could hear at the party, she'd say, "Damn, you're so tall, I got to stand on your feet." That's what she would do. And she would stand on my feet and we would slow dance. And then she would say, Are you trying to talk to me? Oh, no, that's your stomach growling. So anyway, we all have memories of those slow songs. And you know this one? This is You're Still a Young Man. And I'm dedicating the song to WBAI. We can't call WBAI a young man. WBAI is 61 going on 62. And WBAI is definitely not a man. WBAI is non-binary. In fact, WBAI is non-binary gender-wise, but it is binary broadcast-wise because we're digital, all ones and zeros if you go to WBAI.org to hear us. So we're having this song played because we're announcing a special campaign. For 2021, WBAI had a surplus for the first time in a long time. So as we move into our golden years, it's time for a little bit of celebration. But why are we announcing a campaign if we have a surplus? Because as soon as you have a little money in your pocket, you don't start moving forward. You don't stop, you know, you don't stop your hustle. You don't stop trying to get make things better. And so we're playing this song, which is by Tower of Power, because we're calling this our Tower of Power Fund special campaign. It's for year-end 21 and into 22. We're trying to raise additional money to pay the rent on our broadcast tower, $17,000 a month. People think of radio and they think of Stephanie and Anissa and myself having conversations. They think of Catherine engineering the microphones and the equipment in the studio. But we don't think about that the sound leaves and it goes to four times square to a transmitter up to a tower at the tune of $17,000 a month. So what we're trying to do now is get ahead on that $250,000. That's what 17 times 12 is. So we're having the Tower Fund, the Tower of Power Fund, and you can go to towerfund.wbai.org and make your donation. And we're asking you to help us get this big bill out of the way ahead of time so we can concentrate on other things. And we're asking you to do that by also going to the website or going to our call-in line, our pledge call-in line, 212-209-2950. Keep WBAI young and keep it on the air. All the programming, where else are you going to hear such a group as the Lady Lifers singing from behind the bars in Muncie, Pennsylvania, about This Is Not Our Home? Where are you going to hear about programs like CCF, and not just a quick soundbite, but an entire hour to talk about the important issue of women, education, and the denial, the cruel denial of educational funds to punish people, and then look at the consequences. It's almost as if they actually wanted recidivism to happen so they could keep building prisons. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, you may be one of our members and may have already donated $25 or more and gotten great gifts, but we're asking you to step up and make an additional donation if you can. You may be one of our sustaining buddies, our WBAI buddies, who have $10 a month or more regularly transferred from your bank account to the stations, so the WBAI has income they can count on. But above that, I'm saying thank you, and please make an additional donation to help us get over the top on this. There's nowhere else where you're going to hear the kinds of stories you hear. Look at the spectrum of shows. Some you like, some you don't like so much, but everybody has a voice here, and we're going to be taking calls in a minute, and I'll be announcing the number. I'll announce it now, 212-209-2950. And think about what you're able to talk about here and what you're able to do by supporting WBAI's Tower Fund. Thank you, Tower of Power, and I'm thanking you in advance. So as I said, the phone lines are open, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Are you a woman with experience behind the walls? Do you have a family member that is? Do you remember the bad old days of punitive laws, federal and state, and the attacks that created this mass incarceration? Do you have any questions for Stephanie Bazell, Director of Advocacy for College and Community Fellowship, or Anissa Sabour, who told us her compelling story, got her education, and went on to become an advocate herself? The phone lines are open, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. So turning back to you, Stephanie Bazell, What is the campaign that you have going on as far as restoring the grants? I know you've got some special events that are coming up, and I hadn't told you this, but we'll be having you back on closer to the end of the month when all of these things happen. So talk to us.
Oh, well, that's exciting to hear. So the campaign is hashtag turn on the tap NY, and it's about the financial aid that allows these education programs in New York. Is called the Tuition Assistance Program at the federal level. It's Pell, and it's really just the law is just one sentence. It's striking out the ban for incarcerated people. So this campaign has really been mobilizing, and yesterday we had a big victory when the policy was announced in Kathy Hochul's State of the State. But we still have to get it. It still has to be in the New York budget. So we are still need to sort of relentlessly be pushing the legislature to include it in the budget. And this will culminate in an advocacy day on January 25th that we'll be hosting virtually.
So we're going to hear more about that later and other action items people can do. But right now, we've got a caller. Caller, what's your name? Oh, and caller, please be brief because we want to have time for folks to answer. We're getting close to the end of the program. So caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's your question or comment?
Hi, hello?
You are on the air.
Okay, I'm L from Long Island, if I'm on. Am I on?
You are on the air.
Okay, thank you so very much. Very interesting program, and I know you're pressed for time, so I'm going to be quite fast, I hope. I believe the young lady who spoke, Vanessa, who got the associate degree, she says she knows she knows the name of 10 women who have organizations who are doing something. I would like a way of getting in contact with her, or I will leave my number with you and ask her to call me. I believe the Lifers in Pennsylvania, I wish to know how I can get a copy or download or whatever it is, their song, This Is Not My Home. And I'd like to get a little, I beg your pardon?
Okay, no, I'm going to say I want to stop you there because I want Anissa to be able to respond with some of the organizations. And what I'll say to you and anyone else, if you want the link to the Lady Lifers, email me at king@wbai.org, and I'll get that to you. Is your radio on in the background? Anyway, Anissa, please tell her tell her something about the organizations that these women,
I heard her say she was from Long Island, and I know that one of the organizations is New Hour Long Island that works specifically with women coming out of jail and prison for Long Islanders. But there are others. If she's interested in New York City organizations, there are several. And my email is my first name, anisah613@gmail.com. You can reach me there.
So that's anisah613@gmail.com. So we're going to wrap things up. And so turning to you, Stephanie, again, can you let folks know how to get information? I know you said it already about the organization, but also about the special campaign to turn on the tap.
Yes, absolutely. So it's collegeandcommunity.org is the website, and there's also turnonthetapny.org, which is for all things tap related. And if you want to register and you don't have to have any experience with the policy, you know, we will provide the training for you. It is bit.ly/tap day 2022.
Thank you for that. Anissa, thank you for your amazing story. Anissa Sabour, an alum of College and Community Fellowship who has now become an advocate. That's great. That's great. And also thank you to Stephanie Bazell, Director of Advocacy for College and Community Fellowship. that wraps it up for me. Not only wraps up this show, but it wraps up my week. We'll be back with more next week. The program is Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. You're listening to all this on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live on WBAI.org. Coming up next is What's Going On, the daily program that follows us, and after that, Democracy Now!, but most importantly, please, please join the Tower of Power Fund and make an additional contribution if you have already. Go to towerfund.wbai.org, towerfund.wbai.org, or call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Have a great rest of the week. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you on Monday.
Dragonfly out in the sun. You know what I mean. Butterflies are having fun. You know what I mean. Live in peace when day is done. That's what I mean. And this whole world is a new world. And a whole
was a little girl, I wished I was a boy. I tagged along behind the gang and wore me corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an engineer. Mama told me, can't you be a lady?
On Folk Radio this Thursday at 10 p.m., we take another deep dive into the best of Broadside, a collection of songs by topical folk music singer-songwriters, which that magazine published during its years, from 1962 to 1988. Besides Peggy Seeger, who we are listening to now, we'll hear from her brother Pete, Phil Oakes, Sis Cunningham, Broadside's publisher, Pat Sky, Bob Dylan, Peter Lafarge, Malvina Reynolds, and many others. And we'll close with a little birthday tribute to Joan Baez.